You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants. I am Patricia Traina of The Athletic, Inside Football, and a host of other places. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. It is Thursday, April 5th, and we are coming to you the day after the Giants unveiled their assistant coaching staff to the media. And, Ed, lots of good stuff to come out of the meetings with the assistant coaches.
Yes, Patty, there was. It's always interesting. We went through this not that long ago when Ben McAdoo introduced his staff. It's always interesting to meet these guys for the first time, to get to hear what they have to say, and see what start to take the measure of these guys a little bit and see what you think they're going to bring to the Giants.
Absolutely, and so much was said yesterday, but we're going to break the show down today into obviously offense and defense because, obviously everybody wanted to hear from offensive coordinator Mike Shula. Everybody wanted to hear from defensive coordinator James Betcher. And once we heard from them, we obviously could go to the individual position coaches to get more insight or elaboration on what was said. So, Ed, let's start with the offensive side of the ball and Mike Shula. And I'm going to ask you, what were your key takeaways from what he had to say?
Well, it's kind of interesting, talking to Shula, because this is a little different role for him. I mean, it's sort of like where Mike Sullivan was last year. He's the offensive coordinator, but it's not necessarily his offense. It's Pat Shurmur's offense, and you could tell, he's trying to find his place in what his role is going to be, in what his voice is going to be, in what he's going to bring to the offense, and trying to fit, trying to fit his voice into what Shurmur wants. So, in that respect, it's not like saying, okay, coach, what's the offense going to look like? What are you going to run? What's your system going to be? Because he can't answer that question. I mean, the one thing that he did, get asked about directly yesterday was, of course, Odell Beckham, and had some interesting things to say about Odell. So, but that was my first takeaway from Shula, though, was that you can tell he's kind of trying to find his place, in where he's going to fit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He made mention at least a couple of times about how he was the last of the assistant coaches to come on board. So he's kind of, getting caught up, if you will, on where things stand. But otherwise, really he didn't say anything that I thought was earth-shattering. He said that our goal is to be versatile. Our goal is to make sure that we don't, kind of relied too heavily on Odell to the point where we're predictable. All things you kind of expected. Now, of course, he was also asked about the quarterbacks. I know I asked him about Davis Webb, and he said, he basically said, oh, I haven't really, gotten a feel for him, but, they are going to get a feel for what Davis Webb can do, or somewhat of a feel, I should say, when they have the voluntary minicamp in a couple weeks. But really, I agree with you. I think Shula is kind of feeling his way around. And I would think that by the time we get to the rookie camp in May, which is next time I believe the coordinators will be available to speak, he might have a better feel for where his place is and what this offense is going to be all about.
Patty, one thing that I did want to mention that came up in talking to Mike Shula, it came up, I spent quite a bit of time with offensive line coach Hal Hunter, It came up, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about James Betcher, you know, later on. It's come up in conversations with Pat Shurmur. You know, for the last couple of years, and maybe even going back to when Kevin Gilbride was the offensive coordinator, we talked about scheme. And, you know, we considered the Giants were a West Coast scheme on offense, or, you know, we knew that there was a specific way that the Giants were going to try to do things, that they were going to try to attack on both offense and defense. And one of the things that for me, you know, as we kind of focus on offense, one of the things that keeps coming up and that keeps impressing me is this idea that the Giants aren't locked into this is how we're going to play offense. What you keep hearing is it's a multiple scheme. You know, we need to fit, you know, I think Hal Hunter said square peg, square hole yesterday a couple of times. We need to figure out what our players can do and do that. We don't want to approach this and say, this is the system we're going to run and that's how it's going to be. I've been really encouraged, you know, by that kind of indication, you know, from everyone.
Yeah, especially if you take into consideration, you know, the last couple of years, you kind of walked away with the impression that this is the system and you've got to fit into the system, as opposed to the other way around of fitting the system around what you have. And I really like that approach. And, you know, it's interesting. The offense is by no means complete. I know I had asked Shula about the offensive line. I said to him, is it kind of unsettling a little bit to know that line, is, you know, which is where it all starts. I mean, let's be real. If that line's not blocking or opening holes, you're just not going to have an offense. But I asked him, I said, is it unsettling a bit that, you know, that line isn't settled, you know, it's not set? And he said, no, quite the opposite. It's actually exciting because, you know, I guess seeing it all come together. But, you know, you look at the offense and what they still have to do. They obviously have to resolve the right side of the line. You know, Eric Flowers is going to compete for the right tackle spot, but he hasn't been promised a job. You know, are they going to go with John Jerry at right guard, or are they going to maybe have, you know, John Jalapio, or a still-to-be-determined draft pick step in and take that spot? You know, the running back situation, you know, they added Jonathan Stewart, but he's probably not a long-term solution. So do they maybe look to add another guy, you know, in the draft to boost up that thing? And then you've got to figure out, what are you going to do with Brandon Marshall? I mean, right now, the thinking is he cannot pass a physical. I mean, we don't know that. No one has told us that, but you know, if he can't pass the physical, or I should say, once he can pass the physical, you know, do you give him another shot, or do you move him out and his, you know, his big cap number, and do you bring in a new number two guy? So still a little bit of work to be done there on the offensive side of the ball. And you know, I kind of like that you know, or at least the impression I got from Shula that I like is they're kind of, you know, rolling with it, and as it happens, and they're adjusting accordingly, as opposed to locking themselves into a specific setting. So,
yeah, I think, Patty, I did want to make mention of one thing. If I'm not mistaken, at the NFL owners meeting a week or so ago, Pat Shurmur did say that as of now, Brandon Marshall is unable to pass a physical. So, you know, so there is that, you know, so his status is still, you know, to be determined. But if I remember correctly, he did say, you know, that Marshall as of yet is not healthy enough to pass a physical.
Okay, yeah. Now that you mentioned that, I do remember that. I thought that was the case, but again, until you hear it officially, and you know, I had forgotten that. But anyway, you know, so the point being is you know, people ask. I know people ask me all the time, well, why is Brandon Marshall still on the roster? And A, he can't, you know, until he can pass the physical, I don't think they're going to do anything because they want to be able to optimize any savings if they do decide to cut him. But then again, you also have to take into consideration that it is possible they may want him on the roster, that they might see a role for him. We don't know that. We will get an opportunity to speak with Pat Shurmur again on Monday. Monday is when the players report for the voluntary off-season conditioning program. So we will obviously get that opportunity to see where they stand and if Marshall is maybe in the plans. But if he is not, and, you know, the feeling around, you know, those of us on the outside is he isn't, you know, what do they do for a number two receiver? You know, because Sterling Shepard's their slot guy. Do they have a number two receiver on that roster? And my guess is they don't, you know, other than Marshall right now. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Ed, before we go to the defensive side of the ball, we do have to briefly touch upon Odell. And before everybody, you know, let's have a collective groan. Basically, you know, the question came up again about, you know, is Odell expected at the off-season program? And here's the thing. I mean, you got to remember that the off-season program is voluntary. The only thing in the off-season slate that is mandatory is the mandatory minicamp that they hold in June. Everything else is voluntary. All right. So I know people last year made a big deal, a big fuss. Why isn't Odell here? Why isn't Olivier Vernon here? Voluntary. Can't stress this enough. I'll probably say this 100 more times. Now, in Odell's situation, you know, I had a fan ask me yesterday on Twitter, well, wouldn't it be a sign of good faith if he showed up? Yes, it would. I'm not going to dispute that. But right now, you also have to understand something about Odell. Number one, I think even if he does show up to the start of the program, remember, the media is not getting in the building until, I think, the April 19th, I think it is, when we go to see Dave Gettleman and hear what he has to say about the draft. So even if Odell were in the building, I highly doubt he would come out to talk to the media, you know, and create a further distraction, if you will, because let's face it, everything he says, people hang on. The other thing is guys are going to come and go in the off-season program. I don't think everybody is there every day. You know, I don't think they have 100% attendance. So I would just caution people to not get worked up either way if it does get out that Odell was there or wasn't there, because it is voluntary. And, you know, as I've been telling people all along, you know, when they get to the mini camp later this month, Odell isn't cleared to do football activity now anyway. So there was no chance of him getting on the field for this mini camp coming up. So just keep things, you know, if you can, keep them in perspective here when you know, this news comes out either way.
Yeah, you know, Patty, I would agree. It's, you know, whether he's there next week or not, you know, don't obsess about that. You know, there will be bigger news. You know, let's see what happens at the mandatory mini camp. Let's see what happens, you know, later on in the summer, and let's see what we hear, you know, regarding any, you know, any long-term contract talk. But I'm not going to get all worked up about whether or not, you know, whether or not Beckham's there, you know, next week or for any of the off-season stuff. It would be nice, you know, if he's around, you know, for at least some of the OTAs, whether he's on the field or not, you know. But I'm not going to obsess about it. It's just there are going to be a lot bigger fish to worry about, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. But, you know, Odell is a story no matter what he does. So I suspect it'll mushroom regardless of what he does, and we may have to touch upon it in our respective writings. But I just know, sitting here today, I can tell you I'm not going to sit there and start, oh, my God, they've got to trade him because he's not showing up. He's not, you know, showing good faith and being part of the team. you want everybody there, you know, like you said, you want everybody there, but you cannot force them to be there, and you've got to remember that. And Odell has said many, many times, I think in the past, that he gets better training with his own personal trainer, and it makes sense if you think about it, because those trainers aren't locked in by the CBA as to what they can and can't do. So a guy who's looking to really push himself can get more out of his workout if he goes and works with a personal trainer, as opposed to working with the team's coaches and on the facility ground where they are governed by the CBA. And I think, you know, Olivier Vernon made that point last year when he was asked, you know, where have you been, and when he finally showed up. Now, that doesn't necessarily help with the football aspect of it, because when you're learning a new offense or a new defense, you know, it's nice to be there to see the lessons in person, to be able to ask questions and bounce things off of your teammates. But there are things that the Giants can do, I'm sure, that will keep Odell, if he chooses to work out, you know, on the West Coast, I'm sure there are things they can do to keep him in the loop that will abide by the rules. What they are, I don't know exactly, but I'm sure that there are things that they can do. It's not going to be a case where we don't see Odell at all and he shows up for the first day of training camp. Now he's so far behind everybody else that, you know, he's useless for, you know, a couple weeks. So I wouldn't worry about it, but, you know, of course people will, and we'll deal with that, I guess, when we get to it.
It's Odell, of course.
Okay, Ed, we're going to take a short pause here, get a word in from our sponsor, and then when we come back, we will talk about our impressions from the defensive side of the ball. All right, Ed. Let's turn our attention to the defensive side of the ball, where we met the charismatic, down-to-earth James Betcher, the defensive coordinator. Really, you know, came across as a really likable, nice guy, a very passionate football man, guy who you could tell was very enthusiastic, couldn't wait to get started working with the players. Your thoughts about what James Betcher had to say and how he just, you know, conducted his first press conference with the media?
Well, you know, like you, I was impressed by Betcher. Again, it's a little bit like, you know, talking to, you know, what we've heard from Pat Shurmur, you know, what we heard from Mike Shula, you know, what I heard from Hal Hunter yesterday, you know, some of the other offensive coaches. One of the impressive things, you know, people are trying, you know, he talked about scheme, and, you know, there's an obsession about this idea that the Giants are transitioning from 3-4 to 4-3. And the reality of it is they'll probably use more 3-4 looks, because that's what Arizona did, you know, with Betcher in charge. But the impressive thing was him again talking about, you know, not knowing what this defense is going to be, not knowing what they're going to hang their hat on, you know, saying that in terms of you know, the calls and the alignments and things like that, you know, saying that they might be different on every single down, you know, 3-4, 4-3, you know, sending four guys, sending six guys. You know, just in general, I'm impressed by the, or at least encouraged by the idea that what these guys want to do in general is find out what they have and use it the best way that they can, rather than say, this is our system, you know, and this is how we're going to do this, and you guys are going to fit into it. So, you know, for me, just the multiplicity and the willingness to be flexible is a great thing.
I agree with you. I mean, that you hear Betcher talk, you know, actually all the defensive coaches, when they spoke, every time the question was brought up about the 3-4, you know, I must have heard of it at least like five or six times. They were like, you know, yes, we're going to be based in the 3-4, but we're going to be multiple. And I think a lot of people panic about that, you know, because they say, oh, my God, the Giants don't have the linebackers to be in a 3-4. There are things that Betcher can do with different alignments, and it's really a chess match if you think about it. You know, it's trying to figure out what's the opposing offense going to do and how can you counter it. And I like that, you know, he's going to be flexible enough to move guys around. And the other thing that I really like is that he's expanding the roles of guys who you know, when you think of guys who you want to expand their roles, you know, two guys come to mind, Olivier Vernon and Landon Collins. And those are guys who were, you know, have been productive. You know, could they be even more productive? Absolutely. But it sounds like what Betcher might have planned for those two guys is going to allow them to really, you know, take off in terms of their productivity. And, you know, especially Vernon, because, you know, with Vernon, people look at the sacks. And in 2 years, I believe he's had 14 sacks. But he's also had over 100 total quarterback disruptions, according to Pro Football Focus. Disruptions being pressures, hits, hurries, and sacks. So, you know, the guy's been productive. And this is with fighting through, you know, the wrist injury in 2016 and the ankle injury in 2017. Now you give him, you know, an opportunity to stand up more, and he did quite a bit of that last year. I think he stood up as an outside linebacker in a 3-4 look. I want to say over 200 times out of his 600 plus snaps. And you know, now if you can get the guys up front to collapse the pocket, now maybe you give a guy like Vernon, who has, you know, pretty good get off speed, who you know, he has decent strength, you give him an opportunity to really fight his way through and maybe increase that sack total. And really the same thing with Landon Collins. I got the impression that Collins is going to be kind of like that pseudo linebacker. If you think back to a role that Deion Grant played a few years ago in the 2011 team, you know, something similar to that. And I'm really excited to see how those two guys, if they are able to stay healthy, you know, how that their productivity is going to be affected.
Yeah, you know, there's two things in reference to Olivier Vernon. You know, everybody worries about this idea that, you know, how is Vernon going to cover, you know, running backs and tight ends and all of that? And Betcher was clear. You know, he said, we had Chandler Jones and we converted him, but we didn't make our money by having this guy go backwards, you know, and cover very often. It's something you do as a change-up. It's something he'll have to know how to do, but it's not something the Giants are going to rely on him to do. They'll use him to set the edge against the run, and they'll put him in as many situations, you know, either standing up or in nickel packages, you know, with his hand in the ground as a 4-3 defensive end. They'll put him in as many matchups where he can go forward, you know, and pressure quarterbacks as they can. In reference to Landon Collins, the thing that everybody jumps to is, you know, this money backer role, you know, that the Arizona Cardinals had for Deion Buchanan. But what I've found interesting is that the Giants haven't talked about Collins in that way. And Betcher didn't talk about Collins, you know, in that way yesterday either. He mentioned Tyvon Branch, Tyron Matthew, I think Tony Jefferson, some of the other players that the Cardinals used in multiple roles, occasionally down at the line of scrimmage, sometimes, you know, as a center fielder, you know, maybe sometimes in the slot, moving guys around to create matchups, to create some confusion on offense. He didn't necessarily talk about, you know, pigeonholing Collins as that pseudo linebacker. He talked about using him in as many ways as he can, you know, and I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and you can't pigeonhole a guy, you know, in a role. I mean, you want to get the most you can out of the talent while, you know, minimizing what they don't necessarily do well. And, you know, it all boils down, it's funny, one of the big questions I know that made its way around the defensive coaches, particularly linebacker coach Bill McGovern and defensive line coach Gary Emanuel is, you know, well, how do you go and convert a 4-3 defensive end to a 3-4 outside linebacker? And the message they gave was pretty consistent. They said, look, it all starts with the player. The player's got to buy in. He's got to want to work at it. He's going to want to be coached. You know, he's got to do his part. And the good news is you know, you look at a guy like Vernon. He comes in. He's quiet. He does his thing. He doesn't, you know, make waves. And he works his tail off. You know, again, unfortunately, injuries have you know, gotten in the way of, I think, what he probably hoped to do, or, you know, the production he's probably capable of doing. But, you know, you couldn't ask for a better guy, I think, to want to convert than Vernon, because, you know, you look at his work ethic and the little things he does. Like, remember all the times at training camp they'd be standing around and he'd be, you know, in the hot sun, the high heat, he'd be doing sprints back and forth because, you know, he didn't want to stand around and get cold. Just little things like that. And you know, Collins is another guy who's like that, who will do whatever it takes to get himself, you know, to be the best he can possibly be. So these are guys who may not have the captainship or the leadership label, but they are leaders by example. And as much as I don't particularly care for the term leader by example, because I think it's a passive way of leading, these are guys who, you know, when you look to how it should be done, you know, Landon Collins and Olivier Vernon are two guys that you definitely want to try and, you know, emulate it if you're a young player. So we'll see how that all works out. It's certainly going to be interesting. Ed, quick note before we call it a show. The Giants, as we record this, actually, the Giants have not officially announced this, but the agent has William Gay, a longtime cornerback with Pittsburgh, is signing. So his agent has announced that's happening. We don't have the terms, but William Gay is I believe, entering his 12th season. He's been with the Steelers all but 1 year. The 1 year he was with the Cardinals, I think, in 2012, where he was coached by DeShea Townsend, who is now the assistant defensive backs coach for the Giants. So another guy who has a tie to the current coaching staff or front office general manager.
Yeah, I think Townsend and Gay also played together for a while in Pittsburgh. So, you know, so there's a connection mm-hmm. there. And the Giants, you know, they continue after cutting ties with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and losing Ross Cockrell, they continue to give themselves options, you know, for depth, you know, at corner. You know, Gay is the fourth, you know, corner that I think they've signed. I think he's the biggest name. You know, hopefully at 33, you know, he's got something left. I don't think he played a ton of snaps for Pittsburgh last year. But again, the Giants also continue to do something, you know, under Dave Gettleman here that they haven't done in the past, at least in the past few years. They're signing, you know, older guys like William Gay, like Jonathan Stewart, like a backup offensive lineman who's got 10 or 11 years in the league, like John Greco, guys who can be, you know, locker room presences, guys who know this coaching staff. So, you know, guys who can help establish this culture that the Giants are trying to build, you know, as they try to erase the 3-13 from last year. So it's interesting. It's a different way of building a roster, and we'll see where it goes. But I kind of like the signing of Gay today.
Yeah, it's a balanced way of building a roster. You know, I know people were screaming about, well, why did the Giants sign Jonathan Stewart? This is a guy who is going to come in to a running backs room where you have a bunch of relatively young guys, and he's going to show them, hey, this is how you last in this league at this position. This is how you be a professional. You know, same thing with William Gay. You know, Dominic Rogers Cromartie, if you think about it, he was kind of like the mentor or big brother to Eli Apple. Well, he's not there anymore, so now, you know, you bring in a William Gay, now maybe he takes that role and says, you know, hey, Eli, this is how it's done. You know, don't waste your talent. This is how you can be better, and so on and so forth. Sometimes, you know, and you can't overlook this, and I think, unfortunately, some fans do. Sometimes when you have a peer who is older and more experienced, and you look at them and you say, gee, whiz, you know, how have you lasted this long? You know, that's that. If that's what they, you know, an aspect that they bring to the equation, that's a pretty good thing, I think. It's an underrated X factor, and it's worth the money. And if they have something left in the tank to give, even better.
I think the Giants did that years ago. As soon as I saw the William Gay announcement, I thought about Sam Shields, or it's not Sam Shields. Who was the there was a veteran, Sam Madison.
Yes.
You know, I thought about that. I mean, he didn't actually play a lot, but he was a very valuable member of those teams with the Giants for a couple of years. And you know, those kinds of guys, you know, can bring more sometimes to a team than just, you know, what they happen to contribute on the field.
Yeah, R.W. McQuarters was another one, because if I remember correctly, Sam Madison actually started, if I'm not mistaken, for the 2007 team, and R.W. was the slot cornerback. But you're right, your point's well taken. You know, those guys, you can't put a price on veteran leadership. And you've got a locker room culture that last year became toxic, and you need guys. You know, if you look at these guys, they've all, for the most part, just about all of them, have played on a winning program at some point recently in their career, you know, a playoff team. And that's so important, because, you know, if you look at locker rooms in the past giant locker rooms, you had guys that really didn't know how to win. And when I look back to the Green Bay game, the playoff game a couple of years ago, they really didn't have a lot of guys on that roster who, you know, had been to the big game, or so to speak, or the playoffs. It was a new experience for a lot of those guys. And it's funny, because when we were talking to the guys after they were eliminated, a lot of them said, now we know how to win, or what we have to do to win, that, you know, stuff that we didn't necessarily know what to do before. So you can't underestimate that X factor. It's so very important. And it's going to be exciting to see how it all comes together. I mean, it's still a work in progress. You still got the draft coming up. And we'll be there following it every step of the way and bringing it to you, Giant fans. So on that note, we will call it a show for today. Thank you, as always, for listening, and make sure you tune in to Locked On Giants again tomorrow.